And we are back with episode 764, or excuse me, 674 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and, well, apparently sometimes playing an ugly American pin can pay off for some people.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm glad I didn't just miss 100 shows.
Sometimes you have to wonder at the rate that these shows tend to kind of spool out. We do this so often that it sometimes feels like you look back at the number and you go, really, wait, we're that high all of a sudden? But yes, it does happen. Yeah, so this is our end of the week show. As usual, we are going to be talking about all kinds of things, but we're not sure exactly what we're going to get into quite yet. So, Edmund, why don't you give a disclaimer so that we can cover ourselves here?
Certainly. Whatever we decide to talk about, if you hear us mention it and you haven't seen it, you might be spoiled, so you might want to fast forward.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Okay, well, we are going to go ahead and just really get into just open topics or whatever it is that we happen to be doing or wondering about or anything else. This is a pretty free-form episode. So, yeah, let's go ahead and just kick it off with Gary. What have you been up to lately?
Oh, geez. Not a lot of our genre topic stuff, but I do have one or two questions we can pull out. I'm involved in the Boy Scouts, and so I recently joined Order of the Arrow, which is sort of an honorific thing you're voted in and have to go through a bit of... an ordeal is what they call it. And so I passed. So I'm now a member for life, I suppose. But that was a lot of fun. But I do have a question. I've been seeing it come out in different sort of medias and stuff. And I don't know if we've addressed this topic in a while. I hear about, the Superman and Batman movie, and I'm hearing all these leaks and everything come out. I'm even hearing leaks about Star Wars 8, and I can't imagine they're a month into filming on it. What are your guys' opinions on movie leaks? Do they actually generate more interest for the movie? Do they spoil the movie and make people not want to go see it? What's your personal opinion on that type of stuff? Do you scour the internet for any little morsels you can?
Oh, geez. I think that I used to a lot more than I do now. I find that just the media in general seems to be feeding this whole spoiler mentality way too much. I remember, I don't want to dominate the conversation by far, but one of the things that I've noticed is that a while ago, we were, we've been for years now, subscribers of Entertainment Weekly. And I don't think they do it anymore, but for a little while there, they had included, a few years ago, a whole page of stuff that was basically just spoilers. And yet, for many years, they were dead set against that. And what I felt like was that was almost a response to the way that culture is dealing with things now, which is the fact that you've got people and entire web pages and sections of everything that is dedicated to trying to summarize every little morsel and an item that you can that has been spoiled about a production. And I think it's almost a normal thing now for us to see that. And it kind of gets on my nerves, to be perfectly honest. I mean, TV Guide, we used to subscribe to that too. And it got so bad in TV Guide that we actually stopped subscribing because you'd just pick it up and they'd start telling you what was going to happen in episodes like a month away. So I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm not going to read that. I'm not going to spoil myself. I'd rather there be mystery. And I think you've heard me complain many times about like things like Doctor Who. We know way too much about what's going to happen every season. This last season was pretty good, but it could have easily been derailed by the fact that we knew that Jenna Louise Coleman was leaving. Really,
they taunted us with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Was actually leaving. Yes.
Yes. what they wound up doing was making the entire season about anticipating that loss and kind of preying on how the Doctor was dealing with the fact that he knew sooner or later something would happen. And it almost became a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it became much more about him than it did about her at the end. But that's all well and good, but it didn't necessarily have to spill out that way. It could have gone many other directions, and we still would have been equally spoiled. So I think that it's... Look at the season before that. I mean, that was series 9, right? Series 8, the problem was that we knew, quote unquote, that Clara was leaving, and it really messed with the whole season, especially when she wound up not leaving. So that's just one example. But yes, I am, I realize there is a happy medium. There's stuff that helps you anticipate. But Gary, I'm like, I'm thinking like you are, that how much do we already know about Batman versus Superman? And how much do we already know or that we think we know about Star Wars 8 or Civil War, which I'll get into in a second. But, those are the kinds of things that, I wonder about that. I wonder how much it kills the enjoyment of it. Edmund, how about you? Your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know I've kind of made a point on this show of mentioning how I now avoid just episode previews on TV. I mean, especially for shows I'm really into, which, you know, does include pretty much everything I talk about on this podcast. I am perfectly willing to not know what's coming up. I trust the writers and producers and actors to tell the story, and I kind of came to this over a few years where there was either the thing of trailers that would occasionally give stuff away from the next episode, or the thing that even annoyed me even more where they'd put together those trailers that would seem to imply that something was going to happen as a misdirect, and then of course the way that that particular scene or line plays out is completely different in the context of the actual episode. I just got tired of it. I was like, no, I am perfectly willing to just hit stop and on my recording, which is how I'm watching stuff, 99% of the time, and just move on without seeing that that preview, and that really has evolved into with all the movie stuff. A lot of the time I may watch some of the official trailers, but even those I'll avoid, and certainly the all of the websites, discussing and parsing. Especially for the big DC and Marvel trailers, where it will tend to be these bunch of little clips, people have slowed it down and stopped it and parsed out, what's happening here, who's in the background over here, and it's like, no, I am perfectly willing to wait for the finished piece to appear on in the theaters or on my screen, or however I'm going to see it. So, I guess I've now become more of the curmudgeon purist on the side, saying, it's not even a matter of don't show me that stuff. I'm just avoiding all of that stuff.
Mm. I kind of remember that back in the day when 24 was running and it was very popular, that I wound up having to do exactly the same thing, because the promos for 24 would be so egregious in showing you everything that happened literally at the end of the next episode that it would blatantly spoil things, and it was like, no, I'm not going to watch the promos for this. There's no way. Gary, any other examples or thoughts on this topic for you?
Just trying to think. Not that it's necessarily spoilers either, but as you have shows that are like The Walking Dead and stuff, where there's source material that will betray the storyline, or even in Game of Thrones, for example, for the longest time until recently, where you, even if you don't know the source material, you have people who do, and they constantly sort of give you sly remarks or comments or something like that. Oh, do you still like that character? Oh, that's nice. And there are spoilers. I don't know if they're intentional or not, and it's not even that you look them up, but they're just, you're exposed to them because of prior source material too, which is a sort of a little separate genre where you're not seeking it out, but it's sort of thrust upon you.
Hmm. Yeah, there is that. What I've noticed lately too, and I, it's just partially because some friends definitely are super into the subject, and that's just the way that it is. But like for Civil War, I hate the idea that the same thing could happen where you just wind up spoiled on the entire movie. There was one article that I had to intentionally make sure that I avoided, where they literally, the title was, "We're going to show you everything that's been in the trailers in what we think the chronological order of the story is." No. I don't want that. Do not want. I don't want to know the story before I go. Isn't that what we complain about with trailers? Isn't that the last thing that you go into a movie, you watch a trailer, and you don't need to watch the movie anymore because the trailer gives you the entire arc? And that's what everybody, complains about. Yet there are entire articles that are dedicated to making it even more blatant. Why? I don't get that. Especially these big movies that I guess maybe they feel like if you're that interested, you're probably going to see it no matter how much you know about it. And I mean, let's take a counter example. One of the things that I really enjoyed about episode 7 was that we seemed to know so much about it, but we really wound up knowing very little. And a lot of it was just assumptions and things that people, they did a really nice job of making it seem like they were telling you more than they were. And even then they were kind of spinning mystery, and I liked that. I like, you know, say what you will about J.J. Abrams, at least he tries. There are others that don't. Really, he does try to keep some degree of mystery around things, even when at some point he has to just admit that he, you know, the jig is up. But my point is that they did a really nice job with that. And what I didn't like hearing was this whole thing of how Rian Johnson, I think his name is going to be loosening up the secrecy around episode 8. And that just made me groan. I was like, no, I don't want that. I don't want all these details. I really feel like we're going to go into Batman versus Superman, to use your example, Gary. In a few weeks, we're going to go into that movie, and I feel like we're just going to be playing connect the dots. And that's unfortunate. It really is, because I feel like I sure hope that Zack Snyder is not just being his usual arrogant self when he says that there's a lot more to it than what we see in the previews. Because right now, it seems really obvious where things are going. So I guess we'll find out. Edmund, any other last thoughts on this topic?
No, except hearing you discuss these things is just making me want to avoid trailers even more.
There you go. Okay, Gary, you said that there were a couple questions. That's one.
You're holding into specifics? My God.
Well, you know.
I guess I'm wondering where the are we almost at the tipping point where we're reaching a glut of superhero stuff now? There's a lot of material out there. Isn't the general public going to sort of get their fill of it, or have we reached almost the golden age of superheroes at this point? There's so many television shows, movies coming out, cable shows. It just seems, or direct shows, whatever we're calling them now. It almost seems like we're reaching a saturation point. And when I say that, I'm not complaining that we have comic book properties in these various medias. I'm thrilled to see it, but it almost seems like they're starting to go to it way too often now.
Edmund, why don't you start with this?
My immediate reaction is what's been intriguing me is the fact that even though there are lots of different comic book properties that are being developed, they do seem to be taking from a variety of different sources. Just sort of the most obvious thing to me is the fact that we've got the standard MCU, we've got the DC movies. We were just talking about Batman versus Superman, but at the same time there are the Vertigo properties, you know, like iZombie and Preacher, and those shows being developed, which I think the general audience, the non-genre and comic book aficionados, we may not even know that they come from those sources. I mean, especially something like, you know, where iZombie can be seen as just, oh, this is taking zombies like The Walking Dead, but doing a more humorous take. Preacher is obviously, you know, much, you know, a very dark Western. The fact that there is that much variety, I think, can help keep this trend going. It's not like it's all just those guys in tights and powered suits blasting around and beating up aliens and over the top villains. I think that's the one thing that might act in its favor and keep this trend going, because there are going to be people in the general public who may like a show and then not even realize that it was based on a comic book series.
Mm. Yeah, I think that that's probably where my answer goes, is that as long as the properties themselves demonstrate some degree of unique identity, then I think we're still okay. I think where my concerns start to rise is when it all becomes a little too, what's the word for it, generic or predictable. I'll give an example. Why I think the DCW stuff works so well is that Arrow versus The Flash versus Legends of Tomorrow versus even Supergirl all have a very distinct identity. I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has its own identity. I think every Netflix Marvel show so far has had its own identity. So you don't have to worry about people seeing them as interchangeable yet. Then you get a movie like Fantastic Four. it's a mess. And so what I see the public doing more is not necessarily getting tired of superheroes, because if they were tired of superheroes, then, I mean, we wouldn't see – we'd see a decline of interest in this. And if anything, I think that we're seeing I think what we're seeing is that there are a lot of people in the general audience that are fans of this type of stuff and fans of comic books and fans of, like, you know, they grew up on the animated Marvel shows and they grew up with all kinds of DC stuff. And they're all very happy to see this stuff on the big screen. And I think that there are a lot of closet fans of the genre out there for all kinds of different reasons. And I think there's even still untapped potential there to a certain extent to go beyond, to go into some of these things, like Edmund was saying, where you've got some properties that they don't even know it's from comic books, but maybe it's going to touch on a nerve maybe, or touch something that certainly sparks interest. But I think that when you get – I think what we're seeing then is that the public is being discerning about certain things. And that's what they maybe need to be more worried about. They're willing to throw a million movies up at the screen, but they better all have their own unique hook. And they all better be good hooks. But otherwise, you're going to see things like – you know what? A lot of people, I don't know if they knew that Jonah Hex came from a comic book, but did it matter? It was a trash movie.
Right.
Ghost Rider movies. Yeah, it's pretty obvious those came from a comic book. Guess what? They were both pretty bad. So the bad movies are bad movies and don't get a good reception because they're bad movies. Fantastic Four there's plenty of people out there that are Fantastic Four fans. That movie tanked, not because people were tired of superhero movies, but I think because people knew that it was a bad movie. Versus Deadpool, which I mean, it astounds me the number of people who know who Deadpool is, but is Deadpool really a household name superhero? Really? I don't know. To me, he's still kind of a side character, but maybe I'm wrong on that. But
well, no,
it's a huge thing.
Yeah, certainly. You know? I mean, not compared to Captain America, Spider-Man, Iron Man, Batman, Superman, obviously.
And yet, the movie, you know, did at least as well, if not better, than many of those movies. So, it depends. It depends a lot on. Like Marvel has shown that they can pull it off, I think. I mean, even Ant-Man, my God, I can't believe that that did as well as it did and that it was so well received. I don't know that DC has proven themselves yet. If anything, I'm mostly worried about those movies, to be perfectly honest. I'm like all the plans that they say that they have after this one for Justice League and these standalone movies and all of that, I feel like that's way unproven. Because we don't – maybe people love the idea of a Flash movie or an Aquaman movie or what have you. That doesn't mean that they want these versions of those characters to have movies. You know what I mean? Where Marvel, I feel like they did it the other way around and proved that and proved at least a degree of popularity. So I see, you know, there is going to be a point where we're at a tipping point, but I don't know that we are. But maybe by the end of the year, things will look very different. And people will be like, enough already. But I don't know. I haven't seen that yet. I see a lot of anticipation and excitement. I don't feel that there's a sense of fatigue yet. I mean, what is your take on this, Gary? Do you personally feel like we're getting too much right now and that we need to back off a bit or what?
Well, I know what you're saying about them picking a variety of material, and I don't fault that. But you make it sound as if it's educated. I feel like they're just throwing everything they possibly can at the wall, and they haven't reached the layer of crap yet. You know, I just feel like, you know, there's a big, you know, pot full of stuff, and they keep picking it up and throwing it out there. And thankfully, they've picked, you know, decent, you know, good stuff so far. But I don't think there's necessarily any discerning between them pulling out bad stuff. I question if they are actually people who know enough about the material to search after good things.
Hmm. Well, I mean, that's there is going to be a certain point where people try everything, and some of it's not going to be good. I guess I don't know. But I don't think the overall genre is overplayed quite yet. I think there's still plenty for them to do. It's just if I'm worried about anything, it's going to be that some of this high profile stuff is going to become all too what's the word I'm looking for here? I guess it's just going to be not generic, but it's just going to seem too similar. And I guess maybe part of that is that I guess we've seen how Marvel has made it dissimilar, but like I said, DC, Zack Snyder kind of being the one kind of driving a lot of this, I'm a little worried about that. He's not exactly known for having range.
Yeah, well, and I mean, we also have the issue, right, that it is still DC in collaboration with Warner Brothers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because I mean, in terms of when you started talking about in terms of you know the way the films are integrated or not integrated, and you know, and that whole weird schizophrenic sibling rivalry that still exists at Warner Brothers, you know, I think is part of the problem here, because I mean, certainly when the moment you mentioned the Flash movie, the fact that you could have a series taking off on the CW with, you know, yes, this guy who used to sing on Glee playing the main character, you know, not who you would normally think of as being able to step into a superhero role, but who is absolutely killing it. And then you're developing the movie and you don't even consider crossing it over, is still, you know, kind of mind-boggling to me, you know, especially given the way the Marvel has managed to integrate between the films and, you know, certainly, I mean, that whole, you know, as we've talked about, the Winter Soldier, Agent Shields crossover was the turning point for that series. So we may once again be dealing with studio politics and corporate structure getting in the way of these things being as good as they could be.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's, we haven't seen the wholesale drop in box office yet. That I think is when we see a trend that the big movies are starting to make less and less, and there's no sense of a bottom, mm-hmm. or a plateau. That's when it's going to be interesting to see, because I guess the maybe we're seeing a little bit of it, Gary. I mean, one of the things that might have been at one point a sign of this was when Gambit got kind of indefinitely postponed lately. But yeah. My sense of that was more that Deadpool's success was another nail in that movie's coffin, because it had so many problems to begin with, including not having a director at the moment. So it's like every single time I look at this and say, what movies have been canceled? Fantastic Four 2 has been canceled. Gambit has been put on hold. A couple other movies have kind of languished and never happened. But for the most part, the schedules remain intact. So we haven't seen the studios start to play the game of let's start hedging our losses yet, except when there's been a clear problem, like the insanity that is what was going on behind the scenes of the Fantastic Four film. And that clearly meant that there was no way you were going to get everything back together for two, you know? So we haven't seen yet where failure has created a situation where the studios just decide to start cutting stuff left and right. They're rethinking things and repositioning things, but they're not reconsidering the entire strategy as a whole. I mean, even you could say, oh, Sony deciding to 86 most of their stuff with Spider-Man. No, they actually negotiated a deal to meld it with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's making it bigger, not smaller, in a certain sense. So, and that was just them seeing the writing on the wall and realizing that they needed to make a change. So, I don't know. I don't see it going, but I do understand your point that actually I feel like maybe having all of this material out there could do more harm than good if they start to go the wrong way. And it starts to deliver a message to the audience that, oh, it's all the same. There's no reason to go and see, you know, whatever comes after X-Men Apocalypse, because it's just going to be more of the same. That they have to make it differential from movie to movie, or it's going to sink. So, Edmund, any last thoughts on this?
Well, it does seem to me that on the Marvel side, they have been doing a very good job of making that differentiation. I mean, you were mentioning Ant-Man, but that whole trio of after the whole build up into Avengers and then Age of Ultron. I mean, having Guardians, Ant-Man, and Deadpool all coming out right after that, and with some people go, you know, really, in some cases, wondering why were you making that, and then to have all of them do so well is a good sign that even in sort of the major cinematic universe, they're seeing the value of doing that and of keeping that variety. And I will just say I'm with you that I'm as much as I have enjoyed his films. having Zack Snyder in charge of so much of the major DC stuff does worry me in terms of its longevity.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's a director with a style that is less is more, to be honest. I mean, I don't have nearly the hate for Watchmen that some other people do.
Oh, no.
But I don't want the entire DC cinematic universe to look like Man of Steel. So I'm hoping that this new movie has a lot more variety to it. But we'll see. We'll find out in a few weeks, won't we? So yes. There we go. All right. So, Gary, anything else that you want to add to the table this week?
No, that's about it.
Yeah. Like you said, you were off doing some other things in real life. So not too much extra time for other genre stuff to kind of fold in. Edmund, how about you?
I wanted to bring up some stuff which I think I've mentioned before, but we do delve into the spy world every now and then. I just wanted to mention I had gotten caught up on London Spy. Seen it all the way through to the end of the first series, was very intrigued by it. It was was starring Ben Whishaw was the series that got some very differential press in the UK when it came out because Ben Whishaw is as a gay man who gets involved with a partner who is in intelligence. He's an analyst at MI6 and dies under mysterious circumstances. So it's sort of one of these cases of a person who's dragged into the spy world completely against his will gets involved in all sorts of controversies with Jim Broadbent playing his mentor in life, it was a very different take on the spy world of someone getting dragged into it from the outside and trying to basically bring justice to his dead lover, and to himself, since naturally he of course winds up getting accused of the murder at one point, but particularly with the melding of Whishaw, I mean, giving a wonderful performance, but also Jim Broadbent has, as it turns out, as the story unspools. I know I gave the spoiler warning. I won't give away too much because I think it is definitely worth seeing if for people who haven't caught up with it. But he does turn out to have been a former spy himself, so knows the world. So particularly there's a few scenes in bringing in people from Broadbent's past and background that is very reminiscent of classic Le Carre scenes in university libraries and some of those old stuffy clubs in London. I just found it to be a wonderfully different take on the spy genre. I did find it went a little bit off the rails as it got to the end. But at the same time brought in a deeply ironic use of the program that the dead lover had come up with. At the very end. I'm still not completely convinced of why Charlotte Rampling, bearing the lead slightly. She also appears as the dead man's mother, does a fabulous job as always. I'm still not completely convinced of why she got in the car at the end. But her and Ben Whishaw driving away at the end into what we now know will be further adventures did seem slightly implausible for a show that had sort of been exploring more the emotional repercussions of getting dragged into the spy world and going a little bit more sensationalist, but it still got me intrigued to see what they come up with for this series two that they've now been granted. So that's the one I have seen, and the other show that I'm really, really looking forward to now is this adaptation of The Night Manager, the Jean Le Carre novel from 91, I believe it was. It will be coming to AMC, not BBC America for once, in April. It is spooling out now on the other side of the Atlantic, but I've actually actually been rereading the book, it's actually one of the first times I've reread one of Le Carre's novels from just after the fall of the Soviet Union, when everybody assumed it's like, oh, John Le Carre's done now. It's like, you know the wall has fallen. You know, none of that stuff is there to write about anymore. And Night Manager was one of his first novels after that had happened, and it's rather fun how he was already managing to shift into there are elements there that are very much like the Smiley novels, and at the same time introducing this character of Richard Roper as this entrepreneur, is what he calls himself, but he's really a very shady and malevolent arms dealer who is basically importing mayhem all over the world for fun and profit. The casting on this one is certainly one of the main draws. You have Hugh Laurie playing Richard Roper, and Tom Hiddleston as the Night Manager himself, who his day job, or I should say his night job, is managing hotels, but he has also been a source from British intelligence over the years, and to some extent it is also a story of someone who winds up getting in a little deeper and perhaps more over his head than he should be. Even though I was just talking about having avoiding small spoilers and behind the scenes stuff, I did read a little bit about the rights for this novel, which had actually been bought shortly after it was brought out. It was published in the 90s, with lots of people looking to try and make a film out of it. But as with most of Le Carre's novels, I think it really does lend itself more to the TV miniseries. I believe it's 6 episodes. At one time, apparently Hugh Laurie himself actually had the rights to it, but with an eye to playing Pine, the night manager, and it does rather amuse me that as things have progressed with this property, it's now come back around as a TV series with him playing the nasty American arms dealer. And I can only assume that when he had the rights and wanted to play Pine, it was before he had his very successful run as House, playing a brilliant, charismatic, but very nasty American.
Quite possibly. You never know. All right, yeah, well, back into the spy world.
Yes.
Should we have maybe put some kind of encryption on that? Did we need to read people into it before they were allowed to listen to that part? I'm guessing not, but...
You know. Just redact it before you release.
That's right. There
yes,
you go.
Yes. We'll just... Well. All I can say is if certain people are listening with the right software, they'll know if I was telling the truth or not.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, so that's the espionage world. Anything else on your list?
Those are the main things I've been focusing on recently.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. I don't have a whole lot on my list myself.
I was forgetting. No, for those who are wondering about my future diary progress, I'm up to episode 21.
Ah, yes. Okay. So. Yes, I was wondering if that was going to come up or not.
The 11th has fallen.
The 11th has fallen. Yes, indeed. Yeah, that's just the one way to put it, I suppose, that there's been a few losses in Yuki's world of late. But so you have seen then, I believe, the episode where Yuki and Yuno do the assault.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh. That is by far one of my favorite parts of the entire series. I mean, I've watched that a few times already. It's just so fun. And what I like the most about that is not just do you get to see Yuno kind of unchained and unleashed upon the world in her glory, but the fact that Yuki turns out to be this mastermind of strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just totally invested. And he's just like, yep, this is what we're going to do. This is how I've manipulated you. Too bad.
and all it took was losing both his mother and father.
Yes, to unhinge him just a little bit, especially under certain circumstances, and that little kind of motivation that he has that, hey, you know, at this point, the way for me to resolve all of my problems and all these people that I've lost is just to win the game.
Yes,
because that totally is going to be able to work out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well. I think literally where I left off, actually just shortly before we started recording, was our master boy detective finally asking the question that somebody should have asked previously. So this thing I want to do, if I actually win, can I do it?
Yeah. You'd think he would have asked that before. It's just slightly possibly hinted that the situation is more complicated than he believes.
Yes,
but
exactly.
What I think you've also noticed then that it continues. Oh, and you also saw the infamous bunny suit episode.
Yes, of course.
Oh God, that is so funny. But anyway, you saw what I was talking about, though, that they really developed some of these other characters and their relationships,
mm-hmm.
like Marco and I. They did a really nice job of going into her background, for instance. And you really start to sympathize with, like, why she wants to win and why he wants to win for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get down to Ninth and her relationship with Nishijima. And, you know, you actually want this. I mean, he's really kind of pathetic at the end of the day, but it's kind of cute how he's chasing after Ninth and just, you know, trying to get her to pay attention to him and to reciprocate, and ultimately she does. And of course, it's always she does right when it's like, oh no,
too late,
now it's all gonna go horribly wrong.
Yes.
But you just see all these couples, and that's why I didn't quite put it that way before, but or if I did, I didn't emphasize it, but you've got all these couples that are really just variations on the theme
mm-hmm.
of kind of devotion and almost, if obsession is not the word, then at least dedication to the whole thing and fixation to a certain degree. You could throw different variations and gradations of severity to the whole thing. But all these people that have reasons to do things for loved ones, and it doesn't work out very well. And it's all kind of pointing a finger at, as much as Yuki and Yuno are getting closer and closer and closer, well, it didn't work out for those couples very well, did it?
No.
So, yes, if you've got the sense that now is when things may go a little awry, hold on to that feeling.
Yeah, I was pretty much there, yes.
Yeah, it gets pretty intricate from here. So, because there are a lot of truths that need to be unlocked. And, I'm looking forward to how you perceive the ending. This is pretty much I when I stopped and then made my run to the end. It was not 21; it was 22 is where I stopped
mm-hmm.
because when I got to 20 end of 21, I had already theorized what was going to happen.
Yes,
so I just had to see if 22 was going to pay it off, and it pretty much did. So that was nice. So I'm assuming that you kind of see where all this is pointing to. So have fun.
I will. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. So let's see. Where was I at here? I was saying that essentially I really haven't had a whole lot of time to get into anything other than our material here. Although I did end up on the gaming side, actually, finishing up, pretty much mopping up everything that was left to do in Assassin's Creed Syndicate. There was some DLC. One was the Jack the Ripper story that I finished out, which was pretty good. And then there was some other stuff that just came out called the Last Maharaja, that it wasn't so much of a complete story in and of itself. It was more just another group of side missions, and they were okay, but it wasn't really nearly as deep as the Jack the Ripper stuff was in terms of storytelling. So I was a little disappointed on that. But since then, I've started a game that is, I think I've mentioned before, called Life is Strange, which is very similar to like the Walking Dead games and other things like the Game of Thrones and so forth, where it's kind of a your choices determine the or have consequences if not determine part of the story. So it's a very different type of this of scenario where, yes, you have those kinds of choices, but let's say you've got two or three different choices. There is a mechanic in the game that's introduced almost immediately where this central character has this unusual ability to rewind time. So let's say that you make a choice, and it's like, I can either not tell on somebody or I can turn them in, something like that. So you go with, I'm not going to say something, and the reaction from the authority is really, really negative. So you sit back and you think to yourself, do I want to live with that consequence, or do I want to see what happens if I go the other way? And you can actually rewind to go and remake the decision. So you it leads you down the path of, yes, your choices are going to have consequences, but at certain key points, you've got to really commit. And sometimes you can see a lot more about what the two branches might be doing. And it gives you – and having that extra information actually makes it a harder decision in some cases. But it's that's as far as right now the sci-fi angle goes or the genre angle goes. Otherwise, it seems to be, at least at this point, a fairly straightforward story. But it's basically a from the point of view of a girl that's gone to a college. So she's trying to kind of figure – she's very introverted and trying to figure out a few things. And I'm still not sure exactly what the plot hook is yet. But yeah, how this power is going to feed into the story, is there are intriguing possibilities there. So I'm looking forward to playing it a bit more. I'm really only about probably two-thirds of the way through the first installment, and I think there are five total. So I've still got a ways to go. But as far as reading stuff is concerned, I've kind of not really had a whole lot of extra time. I'm maybe a third or more into a Star Trek book, the fourth book in the Seekers series, which is, I think, Gary, you probably know it because it's the follow-up to Vanguard.
Wait a minute. There's a follow-up to Vanguard? How did I? Oh, yay!
New book story.
Oh, well, yay. Look, I just made his day.
Oh, it did. I loved Vanguard. Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, I'll caution you slightly that it's not this. It's a little looser story right now. I'm sure that there is a plot arc that I just haven't quite gotten across yet. But this is more like, at least right now, its story is set in the post-Vanguard kind of state of play. So it's in the same area. I think the Taurus Reach is where that is, and it's still in the. It's still dealing with a lot of the same characters in the wake of Vanguard, but it's still pretty early on, so I'm not sure how all the pieces are fitting together, but it's not nearly as dense as Vanguard was. It's a little bit looser, as I can tell right now, as far as I can tell right now. Even if there are a lot of the same characters in their story still parsing out. So, yeah, I'm only on book four, and book four is going pretty interesting so far, but yeah, I haven't had a whole lot of time to read that yet. So, we'll see. But that is about it. I'm trying to think if there was anything else because I really did quite a lot of game stuff. And actually, this week was just derailed a little bit because of allergies of all things. With the temperatures being as warm as they were up here in the Northeast, spring kind of hit me like a brick to the face. So I hate to use that analogy because other people have had things that probably were a lot closer to being a brick to the face, but. Even so, it was like allergies hit me badly on a few nights this past week, and I wound up actually going to bed fairly early for me. So I'm glad it was a lighter week on the as far as the amount of material we were trying to cover, because I don't know if I would have been even close to keeping up with everything otherwise. But yeah, that's what I've been reading, what I've been playing, and also slightly trying to catch up still with my backlog of comic books. I'm still somewhere back in like November. So I'm still a few months behind.
Superman gets his uniform back in time for the movie.
I'm sure that he does, but yeah.
John, I do just have to ask, did the Assassin's Creed developers reveal that they are Babylon 5 fans by mentioning Sebastian somewhere in the Jack the Ripper add-on?
Sadly, no. I don't know. I guess we did a spoiler thing, and this has been out for a little while. But most of the Jack the Ripper story was focused on the fact that he was someone who had been recruited by the assassins and went kind of crazy, and really that it was more of a, we've got to handle our own, this problem that we created on our own, and also find a way to hide how we're implicated in all this. So yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of room in there for connections to Vorlons. Sorry.
Yes, and now you've gone to mention handles, and I'm just thinking of heavy metal, and I've got a handle on this. Which didn't work out too well there either.
No, it did not. One of the nice things for those who enjoyed playing Evie more than they enjoyed playing Jacob is that almost the entire story is played from Evie's point of view. So it's kind of nice that if you've been playing as Evie, then you get to kind of see how things go later in her life, which is nice. But yeah, I mean, I if you add the time that I put into the Jack the Ripper stuff, I'm now pushing upwards of 90 plus hours in that game. So I'm I'm done.
Yeah. But you have so many trophies.
I do, and there are others that I didn't get, and I'm not going to take the time to go back and get them. But the one thing that's a little bit sad is that this year they're not putting out a game, but I guess it's all for the good. I'd rather they take the time and really nail the next one. Syndicate was really good, but I definitely get the idea that people still were upset after Unity. So yeah, give them a year off. Let them polish things up a little bit more. Rethink where they're going. All right, well, that's about it for me. And I guess any last things from you guys?
No, just we will have to await my final Yuki Uno update.
There you go. I certainly will. And I'm sure there are others in the audience that will too. So I guess we're going to go ahead and wrap this week up. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.